Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
My guest today is Mark Walters. He has been on our show once before, but it's been far too long. Mark has had a varied career, including the Navy and public school teacher, prison chaplain, correction deputy for the Sheriff's Department. Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Bob, for having me.
Well, Mark, boy, when I brought you on a year ago, or actually more than a year ago now, a lot of the riots had broken out across the country, and you were commenting on that from some of your experiences as a conservative African-American. What we've been hearing a lot lately, and it's not a new, it's not a brand new term, but it's become popular so that I think to a lot of people it's new. A lot of people don't know what it means. Critical race theory. And the left makes these terms sound so good. Can you get to the bottom of this for us, just like we're all third graders? What the heck is critical race theory? Because parents listening, people plan to go in and teach this stuff to your children right in the elementary school level. In fact, there are a lot of teachers unions that are threatening to not even open up after COVID unless they can be free to go in and teach critical race theory. So it's very important that you know what this stuff is. It may be a nice sounding phrase, but underneath the sound, what does it mean, Mark?
Well, one of the things I found out, Bob, when looking at critical race theory itself is it's better more or less to look at more or less the tenets of what it is to be able to identify it. Because even myself, like I just recently saw an interview between a TV host and a politician. And one of the things that happened during this exchange was that the politician somewhat became frustrated. And so did the host, because the host could not get the politician to identify for him what was critical race theory, or how to identify it so you can speak to creating some type of legislation to go against it. So what I've come to find out here in the research that I've done is some of the tenets of what it's that a person can look at when they're trying to identify critical race theory. One of those happened to be race is permanent. They believe that racism is always permanent, it's pervasive, and it's normal. And everywhere and in every interaction, we have it with us, according to them. Racism and oppression hasn't really disappeared, but it has just only evolved. So we haven't gotten rid of it. It just have taken on a new face.
So if somebody wants to say, well, we don't have segregation laws anymore, we don't have Jim Crow laws anymore, we don't have slavery, they go, oh, yeah, but it's evolved into something else. And what it's evolved into is just as bad.
Just as bad. And the second point they like to raise is that racism, classism, sexism, climate change, transgenderism, etc., are all interlinked. They're all one in the same and must be fought at the same time as simultaneously. So if you are oftentimes when you find yourself, you're working, you think you're trying to address the issue of racism, you find out that all these other isms is something that that critical racism or critical theory, which is the main umbrella that everything sits under, is supporting as well.
Now, what would be their bridge between racism and, say, the LGBTQ agenda? Would they go back to, well, somebody was born gay, just like somebody's born of a certain race? Is that they try to bridge it there?
Well, one of the things you got to look at, according to the critical theory or the critical race theory, and they also borrow the same thing, they see two groups that they are constantly, that's at play in a situation, which is the oppressor and the oppressed. So in all these situations, they look at the group that is somehow with some type of disparity in what they are able to do in society. They look at this group as always being the oppressor, and the group that is the for the most part the oppressor, namely what most of them focus on, is being the white male in particular, and a white conservative male or Christian male. That's what they look at. So they simply see there's the interlocking of all of these causes of being one and the same. So you're not just fighting critical racism when you're trying to address it. You're fighting all of these situations. The third issue that most that you look at when you're dealing with the critical race supporters, critical race theory supporters, is the claims of objectivity, neutrality, and meritocracy or colorblindness are all disguises to cover up hidden racism. So whenever you claim that, well, I'm somewhat neutral on an issue, or, well, but objectivity would suggest they will indicate once you bring that to the table that you are using that as a way to hide your actual racism. That is not...
Okay, so translation, if you bring to them an actual fact that challenges what they say, you wouldn't have brought this so-called fact if you weren't a racist.
There you go. It is.
Some would call that circular reasoning.
It is. Very, very difficult. Empirical information, data...
That's the enemy of the left.
It is. You just don't listen to it. And then fourth is the live experiences of people who are oppressed or groups that are oppressed is essential to understanding critical race theory. So if a person who is, in this case, if they're black, if they have had a experience, their experience supersedes the oppressed group whenever they bring an issue to the table, because that issue is the issue that actually helps to identify the reality of racism that's going on. And that gives them some type of an authority.
So somebody could say, I felt this person was treating me in a racist way. Well, did they actually say it in so many words? Well, no, not in so many words, but that's the way I felt. Their feelings are the authority.
Their feelings.
And the other person
says,
before God, I swear I never intended to come across that way. That never once entered my mind. I was brought up to not be a racist. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Remember, according to critical race theorists and those who support it, is that racism is always happening, even right now. Just the relationship between you and I, okay? You are an oppressor. I'm an oppressed.
Of course. Then, I'm white. How can I not be an oppressor? I'm white.
There you go. And then now it becomes a conundrum when you look at the fact your Jewish background or anything like that.
Yeah, my people have been victims of racism for years. But right now, it doesn't matter. You're white. If you're white, you're white. That's it.
There you go. It becomes that way. So like I said again, racism is permanent, pervasive and normal. Racism, classism, sexism, climate change, transgenderism, whatever you want to call them, they're all interlinked. When you take on one, you're taking on them all. You have to fight. That's how it is. The claims of objectivity, if you are and being neutral, you're talking about merit-based. Any of this is simply a disguise in order for you to avoid your real racism that you have within yourself. And the last one being that lived experiences of these groups is credential for them to make a case about what's happening in their lives. So it's a very, very difficult mind of thought to really kind of follow.
What do they say to somebody like yourself? You shared a lot of experiences from your background, and you had experienced some racism, but you had a lot of experiences that you didn't feel were racial at all. They were very positive. Does that automatically make you an Uncle Tom, or you're not truly black? How do they respond to you? I know you've told me you go through this all the time with friends and relatives.
Well, think for a moment. According to Ibram Kendi, he is more or less one of the champions of critical theory or the critical race theory. And one of the things that he has concluded, he indicates that to see racial groups as equal is to say, okay, if there's any type of disparities, it can be because of one group is good or another group is bad. It must be because the policy and practices we may not even be able to see. In other words, you can never say that a person's action is contributing to what they're doing. You really only look at there's some type of policy, there's something going on that is the contributing factor, never what the person is doing.
So nobody is taking responsibility for their own actions.
There you go.
Which is so antithetical to Christianity because it begins with we are responsible for our own sin. We're forgiven, but we are responsible for our own sin.
Yes, and according to what they bring out, I was going to mention again also what some of their supporters, if the outcome of what they call equity, the outcome is not what is supposed to happen, then racism exists no matter what. If the equity isn't present, then racism exists.
How would they define equity? I know it's not really equality. It's a word that sounds a lot like equality, but that's not exactly what they mean. How are they defining equity?
Well, equity, when they look at it, like I said again, equity is that whatever happened brings the same, the result that each, if you have two individuals, the best way to look at it is one who is actually doing labor and doing what they're supposed to do and is actually doing work for what they're doing and their action is contributing to what they're doing. If there's another person who's not doing the same thing, in this case, both of them get the same thing. Now, it seemed the same thing when it comes for a job. If you have two people that are going down for a job, if the person doesn't get the job, in the end, the equity is not there. Now, because the outcome is they should get the job. Well, you may say, well, they're not interested in any of the reasons qualified.
Or any of the factors.
There you go.
It's only the outcome.
Yes, only the outcome. So, and if the outcome is that they don't get the job, then simply there's racism present. So it's a very difficult, the philosophy is very, very difficult sometimes to follow.
Yeah, well, I think it's so important that you're here defining these terms. So those would be the tenets of critical race theory. Were there any other tenets or factors?
These are the four basic tenets when you're dealing with critical racism. Like I said before, there's other different ideals that fall under the umbrella of critical theory. But with critical racism, the basics here, the four basics that I get, and if you're interested in looking these up, a gentleman by the name of Neil Shinvey, he's a Christian apologist, and he has summarized these points that helps you to really more or less help you to identify the critical race theory itself.
Now, kind of a cousin to critical race theory is this whole 1619 project. Could you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Well, the 1619 project is headed by Nicole Hannah-Jones. That's who she published, I think, in the New York Times. And what it does, it seeks to redefine the start of the American nation and its cause. The cause of the formation of America was slavery, and it moves the time instead of 1776, moves it back
right.
to—
Right. They want to move it to 100 years before— Well, that's more than 100 years before we actually became the United States. They want to go back to the colonies.
Yeah.
And so, whereas some would say, no, America was birthed on the idea of freedom, this is teaching the exact opposite. No, it was the opposite of freedom. America was birthed on the idea of slavery and oppression.
Yes.
And it's convenient if they go back to the 1600s because a lot of the colonists did own slaves. But that got shaken after we became the United States of America, not all at once, but in time.
Sure. So like I said again, that's what its push is to. And it's tend to want to, like I said, look at the light of the American history and the experience through how slavery happened and all of the horrors of slavery that many of us really have known and have found out in school. But this is something that they want to push and highlight to the American public.
Now, another term that we're hearing a lot today, and we talked about this last time, but I want to get into it again because this is just as popular, and that is systemic racism. What is the claim for that? That seems to be a way of getting people to see that they're racist even if they don't believe they are.
Well, when I think of a system of racism, I'm thinking of during the South and the time and during the Civil Rights Movement, during the times of Jim Crow, when the actual laws and the actual practices of the state itself really was they had actual laws written for whites and blacks and how they get along within the state. So that is that's what I look at as being systemic, or when you have institutional guidelines as to separate a person based upon their race. So that's what I define as being systemic when it comes to the issue of race. But racism today can be, like I said before, according to the critical race theory, it can be, like I said, it's simple loss of a job. It can be if you don't get a book deal. They got an issue right now that's going on in, I think, with the University of North Carolina and Hannah Jones, who is the author of the 1619 Project. And they're looking at the issue is that she's not able, that the school is not willing at the time to give her tenure. And so, as you can see right now, I would assume it's for sure in the minds of many who support her getting tenure there at the school. And there are some people there at the university that are supporting her getting tenure as a professor there at the school, this is an act of racism.
Say it's racist, she'd get tenure. It's very simple.
That's true. But there are people who are alumni who contribute and give quite a bit, as you know, the endowments that really many of our schools and they get, they are considering that this is problematic to bring this ideal onto their campus and to more or less to used is to have this person more or less to be a part of tenure at the school when if you're contributing to the school in this kind of fashion, you'll be concerned with doing that. I mean, if you feel that her work that she did in a 1619 project is not thorough enough to meet what you consider academic Cliff standards and the reflection of the American history. You don't want to stand behind it. But I have no doubt that her action is being perceived by many as an act of racism right now on the part of the...
And I have no doubt that she's going to get her tenure eventually. I can't imagine any other outcome. I do think, though, that some of these donors and patrons and alumni cutting off funds and saying, look, this is not a real education anymore. This is just propaganda, not just on this issue, but so many things being taught, or parents waking up and just not paying the tuition. This may be the only hope that we have to turn our universities around, because money talks.
Yeah.
Very related to critical race theory is reparations for slavery. Could you address that?
Well, this is an issue that's really been going on really for a long time. There are, of course, you know, the political party that's on the side of blacks getting reparation for slavery. You got the Republican Democrats. You know, the Democrats are heavily pushing, and many in the Democratic Party, and there are many for sure in the Black caucus. If not, I'm not sure if it's an actual some type of a letter or guidelines that the Black caucus have put out that they're for it. But I know for sure there are, when I think of people like Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, and many of them are heading panels and hearings regarding it. And I think right now, even the state of California are looking at right now going at their own on some type of either some means or trying to repay descendants of slaves or some kind of fashion for what happened in slavery. I take issues with it myself personally. I see it, like I said before, I believe that strongly that reparation should have been given to freed slaves that happened at the time. Something should have been given to them. Many of them, they didn't have anything at the time when they were freed from slavery. They didn't have property. They didn't have a job. Many of them didn't have education. So I think something that the nation should have come together and put together to help them at the time. And I think at the death of Lincoln, probably many, as it took the wind out of the sail of for many slaves.
Because who knows what he might have done had
he
lived.
That's true. Some people really don't know what happened. But you're talking about now we have moved so far beyond reparation right now. And now the benefits that many blacks have really just have received by just being citizens of America right now really just surpass all of what I think right now it would be just so difficult right now. I mean, you're talking about the complication of doing something like that. We mentioned early on, you're talking about the issue of even blacks who own slavery. How do you deal with situations like that?
Yeah, can you just imagine somebody going to one of these forums and saying there were black people that owned slaves? And we're not, obviously, there were far more black people owned by white people. But black people did own slaves. So what? Are we going to say that black people owe reparations to black? Or what if somebody was just descended from black people in the North who just never were themselves slaves? How do you go back and trace all of that? It would be impossible in most cases.
Yes. Also think about the nations such as the Arab nations and many other places that have played part into slavery. Where do they fit in?
I want to get into that with you because I know you have some thoughts. There is current slavery going on all over the world, and it seems that the left is ignoring the slavery that actually exists today, and they want to keep talking about the slavery of 100 years ago. We could look at the sex trafficking market, but you had some thoughts about slavery in the Middle East. Let's address that because that's kind of a big elephant in the room that these politicians, when they ignore what's currently happening to talk about the past, that tells me they don't really care about human enslavement, that they just care about power and re-election and focus groups.
Yeah, one of the things you're looking at when you're dealing with people who are championing the critical race theory, oftentimes you're dealing with individuals who will tell you that they simply just want to be able to tell the real truth about America or to inform. They're not out simply trying their best to, and they would even say they're not trying their best to divide, but it would almost seem obvious that some things about what they're teaching is incredibly divisive. But one of the things they indicate that many just don't want them to tell, we don't want to really hear the real truth about what slavery really was. But I think the opponents of critical race theory are concerned that those who are championing the critical race theory themselves don't really want to reveal all about the history of slaves. And in this sense, they only want to focus on the ugliness of slavery here in the United States, and they want to ignore the rest of the world. But anybody who reads even a little bit about slavery understand that it is far beyond America and far beyond Great Britain and Europe.
It's really something that indicts every race.
It indicts every one of us. As the scripture said, we've all sinned and come short, okay, when it comes to this issue. And not only that, hatred is something that's within the human heart. I mean, it truly is. But with regard to some of the issue regarding even the Arab countries, there is an individual who is from Ghana, Professor and Minister John Azuma. He has written a book called The Legacy of the Arab Islam in Africa. Now, oftentimes we hear all about some of the terrible things that took place with the transatlantic slave trade here that was to the West.
But a lot of those slaves were simply purchased from African slave owners, weren't they?
Sure. But listen to what it says here. It said, while the mortality rate of the slaves being transported across the Atlantic was as high as 10%, the percentage of the slaves dying in the transit in the Trans-Sahara and the East African slave market was a staggering 80 to 90%.
Wow.
You know? That's those.
I bet no one's planning to come into our public schools and teach that figure.
Yeah, you don't want to get into that. I mean, and that's not a slight against anyone being Arab. I mean, the history of slavery is just terrible. It's terrible for us all. It's just like as Christians.
But the agenda is to make it terrible for some people groups, but not for everybody.
Yes, that seemed like what the issue is here, is to make America really look bad, and then to take the information and to take the teaching and the curriculum and to put it into the minds of children. And look at the other stats here. It said, while almost all the slaves shipped across the Atlantic were for agricultural, most slaves destined for the Muslim Middle East were for sexual exploitation as concubines and harems and for military service. That's something we don't really look at. The exploitation is still going on. You just mentioned that is still happening in the world. And we all know right now the sexual exploitation that is still happening, trafficking young ladies mainly in the sex trade that is still happening across the world and in our own country. It indicated also here, it is estimated that possibly as many as 11 million African were transported across the Atlantic, 95% of which went to South and Central America, mainly to Portugal, Spain, and French possession. Only 5% of the slaves ended up in what we call now today the United States.
That's interesting because you don't hear a lot of indictment of anybody from South America.
Yeah,
when
nobody.
They're talking about slavery.
There you go. You
probably because it's like, well, they're Latino, so they don't count as white slave owners. And yet, yeah, it was all the Americas, North and South America.
Sure. And to countries like France many
yeah, and then around
in Portugal.
Europe too. Yeah, yeah.
And then look here also. It said what? A minimum of 28 million African were enslaved in Muslim Middle East, since at least 80% of those captured by the Muslim slave traders were calculated to have died before reaching the slave market. It is believed that the death toll from 1,400 years of Arab and Muslim slave raid in Africa could have been as high as 112 million slaves. And see, the point is, what are we saying? Is that to put down the Arab nation? No. That's just to show you that the history of slavery is terrible. It's terrible for all nations. You look at China. We're dealing with the issues that they're having right now with the Uyghurs.
It's an immense slave machine in China.
Yes, that's going on right now in China. But because many nations and many of our corporations in places right now that do business with China, most of them, they don't want to go to their mess.
Dr. Fauci says they're okay in China. So, you know, whatever Dr. Fauci says is.
Yeah, even many of our. Not only Dr. Fauci, look at our athletes. Many of them won't say anything about China, anything that it does, because that's hands off. The critical race theory personnel who champion it need to, if you're going to teach slavery, you need to teach the whole world view of it. Don't just simply focus only on America. America is bad. You want to bring out America's sin, bring them out. But if you're going to do that, you should bring out what's happening
more
in the whole world.
More broadly speaking, human beings as a species are sinful.
We're
sinful.
We are
born sinful. This is the message of the gospel. And so to indict all of us, that's what the gospel's all about. We're all guilty, not necessarily all guilty of slavery, but if not slavery, we're guilty of some other sin.
We're guilty of
sin. We're all guilty. None of us deserve God's grace, and God can change hearts, and that's where the real hope is in this.
There you go.
So there are other things about critical race theory. You had mentioned earlier that one of your concerns is what they're not teaching, what they're not doing. And one of them had to do with ongoing slavery that's going on in the present. What are some of your other concerns about really important matters that the critical race theory movement, 1619 Project movement, are ignoring?
Well, I think, again, one of the big issues that is great concern right now is to really overlook some of the disparities that are happening in the Black community that clearly with just an unbiased eye has nothing to do at all with racism or anyone doing anything wrong to a person. You know, what am I talking about here? When you begin to start looking at the family life in the Black, we're talking about in the Black community, and I myself, from my own background, it can be a witness to it in my own life. The issue with the absent fathers in our home. These are issues that are so obvious. You're talking about you're having up to 70% or greater of unwed babies that are being born, moms that are not married. That has a great effect on these children's life. And most of these young children that are born are going to grow up without a father. They're going to grow up
instead of being blamed on an absent father, they'll just go back again and blame white people and systemic racism.
There you go. I've already seen articles right now trying to evade it. They're trying to find the myth of absent fathers in the Black community. I'm thinking
it's a myth.
I have no idea. And if you put that into Google, if you're making a search, it seems like the algorithm that they're having there.
So the myth would be that, yeah, the fathers are absent, but it's because of the systemic racism and it isn't really their fault. And
yeah, it's like I said before, growing up in my own, one of the greatest setbacks in my own life growing up as a kid was not having a father right there for us. We had eight of us that was there in my home, and there was no father there. I mean, one of the things you know that happens automatically is the issue of poverty. And let me mention here clearly, this is from Barack Obama himself. He makes mention of it. We all know the data shows that children who grow up without a father are 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crimes, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. That's from him.
Now, I know he said a lot of that before he became president. Is he still talking that way these days? Because he's embracing a lot of the critical race theory.
It is. That's the point. That's the point.
Of course, he hasn't changed. He's just evolved. That's the word
facts,
now. Evolved.
Yeah, the interesting thing, these facts is he can't change them, you know, because these facts are not predicated upon what he says and what he doesn't. They're just there. You can go into the community, they're still not there. One of the other issues that you're dealing with, we're overlooking the crime issue.
And the black-on-black crime, but organizations like Black Lives Matter don't seem to express any concern
about
that.
I don't know why. Listen to this right here. Data show that 93% of Black homicide victims are killed by other Blacks. Is anyone going to discuss that? Is anyone going to talk about it?
Because it's not convenient to the leftist agenda.
Yeah. It's just really said, look at what we're looking at here. According to, and this is Jason Riley of the Wall Street Journal, he puts out, Blacks commit violent crimes 7 to 10 times the rate that whites do. Now, that has nothing to do with
race. Doesn't have anything to do with race, but you can all just see immediately how somebody would construe that as a racist statement.
They could say, listen, Black commit 52% of the homicide, committed 52% of the homicides between 1980 and 2008, despite composing just 13% of the population.
And if you go into the inner city and you talk to some of the Black mothers who are raising their children by themselves, and you talk to them about defunding the police, they'll say, are you out of your minds? Who do you think's going to suffer if you defund the police? And yet the people that live in Hollywood behind their walled mansions that love to be so bleeding heart and liberal, they're not really worried about that.
It
makes them look good, but look at, they're just leaving people in the dust.
Yeah, what's so sad about it, it doesn't help anyone to overlook that. Blacks can see that. They know that this is happening in our own, in communities where Blacks are living all over the United States, in many of our large cities, that's for sure. In many of our large cities, look at Black crime is even more prevalent in the country's largest cities and counties. There were almost 6,000 Blacks killed by other Blacks in 2015. By contrast, only 258 blacks were killed by police gunfire that same year. And now we got the big issue between defunding the cops, getting rid of police officers. These are things that many people that are championing the critical race theory, they are simply completely overlooking. They will not touch these issues. Why? They need to be. They see these young men. They see them, most of them are young men anyway, that are dealing with these issues. And they don't reach out to try to help them or find out what's going on. They just had a news story of a Black Lives Matter individual who left the Black Lives Matter, isn't it? Because he...
Oh, the guy in Minnesota. He started the Minnesota chapter. Yeah, they don't really care about black lives.
He left because
they were working with the teachers' unions, which caused him great concern.
Yes, another issue. There's not a lot of focus on school and education.
You were an educator for many years. What was the climate like for you there?
The issue that you are working with, still the absence of, in many minority families, particularly, I would just say, when you're dealing with, mostly for sure, when you're speaking about black family, having a parent there in that child life is necessary. It was necessary in my life, okay? But at the same token, without having a father, someone there with the mother, I'm saying men bring a certain element to the family that it just can't be replaced by just having another lady in the house. A man and a woman there guiding that child does something to that child's life. And like I said, I saw it in my own life, that poverty in my own life. When you're looking at families who have, for instance, in my own family life, to give you an example, my mom never had a car. She never had a car. She works very, very hard. But in all of the homes that I saw where the mom and the dad was there, they had a car of maybe more than one car. You know, it may seem like to me right today, it's not a big issue in my life now, but for sure, that was the situation that's growing up. These are just some of the issues, like I said again, that are overlooked when we're dealing with it. Like I said again, then we're talking about the issue of crime. But all these issues right here can play a part into the disparities that are happening in black lives. That has nothing to do with race.
You know, it's interesting because, again, it dovetails back. And if you go in and say in a nuclear family, it's very important to have a male and a female, that would just contradict the whole LGBTQ agenda. I find it interesting that people will say it's not important to have both a male and a female parent. Yet those same people, when they talk about the Supreme Court, I remember when Sandra Sotomayor got nominated, we were hearing, we need women on the court to bring a balance because a woman's going to bring a kind of balance that a man doesn't have. I go, oh, really? How come that doesn't concern you when we're talking about an actual family?
Yeah.
It absolutely makes your head spin. Well, Mark, we're down to just our last minute here. Any closing thoughts for our audience? A little bit of hope. Obviously, the hope is in Jesus.
Of course, the hope is in God. God is the hope of the nation. But I think one of the things we can work on is learning to pray for our nation and to appreciate it. If you're not a Christian, then you can find some areas of appreciation. America is a great country. It has a whole lot of fault, but we can learn to pray for it. We can also learn to become a little bit more active and involved in what's happening in our community. Get involved with our school board. And we're seeing right now, parents right now coming.
Schools get more involved.
Yeah, parents are now raising up. You're seeing them coming to the forefront.
Yeah, well, good for them. Well, yes. Mark, it's always a pleasure having you. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. We will see you next time.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.